Hi, I'm Kathy Moranti, and this is Inspiration for Life Guideposts, June-July 2024. Let's start with Editor's Note, written by Edward Grinnan, Editor-in-Chief. One Friend at a Time. Greeting, friends. I start this way because of the featured upside quote from U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murphy, who warns that the nation's health is threatened by an epidemic of loneliness. His recent report outlines the dire consequences of isolation, alienation, and friendlessness. Loneliness. Those three symbols seem to speak to us. It is inevitable to the human condition. Think of Jesus in Gethsemane. When I first came to Guideposts, the magazine was doing a series on loneliness that drew a lot of response. So many people were struggling. In the many years since, the problem has only grown, exasperated by social media, whose duality both connects us and pushes us apart. A pandemic that locked us down, bitter politics that divide us. No wonder the Surgeon General is worried. There's good news. I've been researching a book on happiness, and the one thing all happy people cite is daily positive connections with others, reaching out and being available for friendship, the banisher of loneliness. The poet Coleridge wrote, "Friendship is a sheltering tree." Or, as Paul Simon sang, "I can be your long-lost pal." I discovered that when I lost my wife, Julie, 2 years ago, grief can be a great isolator. In a sense, Julie's illness had isolated us. Yet I never knew how many friends I had, friends I'd all but lost track of, who reached out and bid me reach out too. Their friendship was balm for my pain, and many of those friendships have flourished since. I can't let them go this time. Those connections are life-affirming. Then there's you, the Guidepost readers. We're all friends here, right? Connected by faith and the power of shared experience. How many of you share your guideposts? It's a good way to make friends and grow in your happiness. Loneliness is a tide that can be beaten back, one friend at a time. Check out Amy Weatherly and Jess Johnston's piece on maintaining lasting friendships. The upside, quotes from today's positive thinkers. When we help other people, we establish an experience or a connection with them, but we also remind ourselves of the value that we bring to the world. Written by Dr. Vivek Murphy, U.S. Surgeon General, on how to combat the public health epidemic of loneliness in this country. The people who make a difference are not the ones with the credentials, but the ones with the concern. Max Lucado, Pastor. You cannot forgive without grace, and grace is not something you can demand. You can only sweep out the chamber of your soul and be ready to receive it when it comes. Murabi Starr, author. The point of life is connection with God, with our own hearts, and with the people God puts in our distinctive corner of the world. From Entangle Your Emotions, Naming What You Feel and Knowing What to Do About It, by Jenny Allen. Happiness is not having the best of everything, but the ability to make the best of anything. Brianna West, author. Joy, it is a journey, but you know it's something that you have to consciously do. Make yourself happy. In the midst of all of it, remain hopeful. Never give up. Ruby Bridges, civil rights activist. God has a plan in the storms of life, but we don't always know what it is. That's the part that requires faith. We reach for a plan, but Jesus offers his hand instead of a map. Bonnie Gray, writer. One-on-one conversation makes the inevitable conflict that will arise whenever humans are in any community together, digital or physical. Fear is surmountable and like a door through which we can walk to better understand ourselves. Dylan Maron, creator of Conversations with People Who Hate Me, for which he interviews people who have posted negative comments on his social media. God can't bless who you pretend to be. He could only bless who you really are. Michael Todd, lead pastor of Transformation Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The number one question I would urge you to ask is this: what is it that you know now or have done now that you wish you'd done 10 years ago? Chip Conley, author of Learning to Love Midlife, on what people should ask themselves to prepare for the second half of their life. The only way that I've gotten this far is with my spiritual faith and being able to take time out to pray. You see the miracles, and that's inspiration and fuel to keep it going. Gwen Stefani, singer-songwriter, on how she handles her busy schedule. You don't have to be blooming to be growing. It was so simple, but remains true and encouraging for me to remember even now, God is still at work in us, even in the seasons when we don't see the blooms we long for. Ruth Chow Simmons, author and speaker, on a realization she had while gardening during a difficult time in her life. Spirit lifting. If God is for us, who can be against us? Romans 8:31. That sunny afternoon, I felt the urge to go to the park and set up my easel to do some painting. But as an amateur with no training, I was worried. What if people in the park saw my artwork, then snickered or made ugly comments? Yet off I went, seeking a secluded area. Leaving my car, I saw a middle-aged man in a three-piece suit entering the park, concealing something under his jacket. He looked around, then walked out onto the grass and whipped out a small, colorful kite. He smiled as he began running, unfurling his kite into the air. I chuckled as I watched. Maybe this fellow had just given a sales pitch and had been told to go fly a kite. Whatever the man's reason for flying a kite at his age in business attire, I approved. Then it occurred to me, he didn't need anyone's approval to fly his kite, nor did I require anyone's permission to paint in public. I smiled to myself as I set up my easel and paints. The truth was that God was with me, so what did it matter who wasn't? Lord, wherever you lead, let me follow. Sandra Clifton. Someone cares, pass it on. A passing but lasting compliment. I was walking through the mall one day when a woman passing by said, "I like your shoes." I glanced down at my well-worn tennis shoes and wondered what was special enough about them to warrant a compliment. My shoes seemed pretty ordinary to me. Still, her kind words stuck with me for the rest of the day. That experience has inspired me to look for ways to give small but sincere compliments to strangers. A man in the grocery store was wearing an unusual shirt, so I called out to him, "That's a handsome shirt you're wearing." As I pushed my cart past him, a delighted expression dawned on his face, which I found very rewarding. I might compliment the color of a lady's nail polish, or someone's lovely smile, or stop to tell a parent what nice manners their child has. There's a saying that as we get older, we get bolder. I'm 89 years young, and I'm not shy when it comes to sharing kind words with strangers. I've learned from experience that a sincere and unexpected compliment can stay with us for hours or days, maybe even forever. Helen Cipolla, Chadsford, Pennsylvania. Dog's best friends. I glanced at the clock, knowing that my dog's favorite time of the day was approaching. Holly the Collie and Abby the Black Labby ran to the window to watch for a certain set of neighbors who would soon be rounding the corner onto our street. The husband and wife team take a walk through the neighborhood at about the same time every day, each wearing a fanny pack filled with large and small dog treats. After the couple has checked to see if it's okay with the owners, they pass out the treats to the dogs they encounter along their route. As the two got close to our house, I headed outside with Holly and Abby bounding ahead of me. The couple enthusiastically greeted my dogs and me. They gave Holly and Abby their daily treats and head scratches while we had a friendly chat. I always enjoy my visits with these thoughtful people who make it a point to love their neighbors, especially the four-legged ones. Anne Foley Routh, Kansas City, Missouri. Featured creatures. I love to crochet, and I'm always looking for ways to use my hobby to make others smile. I found a creative opportunity when I came across an article about a first-grade teacher in Melbourne, Australia, who asked each of her students to draw a creature from their imagination. Then she proceeded to crochet and sew an adorable plush replica of each child's drawings. She crafted all kinds of creatures, including dinosaurs, insects, and Nessie the Loch Ness Monster. Her students loved their new toys, and they became prized possessions. The article noted that this teacher, who wants to remain anonymous, has made a one-of-a-kind stuffed toy for each of her students for several years now. She even delivered them to the students' homes when the schools were closed during the pandemic. I don't have any grandkids yet, but I do have nieces and nephews who'd love a handmade toy made from one of their drawings. I also know a few teachers who might enjoy gifting their students such a special item, and it would really make me happy to help with a fun project that celebrates how unique and imaginative kids are. Beth Gormong, Noblesville, Indiana. The race before her, for this Olympic champion, success bred her greatest fear. How Five Verses Set Her Free, written by Sydney McLaughlin Levron, Los Angeles, California. See me poised in the starting blocks of the 400-meter hurdles, and you might think, I have nerves of steel. After all, I'm the woman's world record holder in the Olympic and the 2021 Olympic gold medalist. But I'm far from unflappable. In fact, for most of my life, I was driven by fear of failure, to not living up to people's expectations. I defined myself by my athletic accomplishments. Nothing about me mattered if I wasn't winning a race. It wasn't until I suffered crushing defeats on and off the track that I turned to the only one greater than my problems, greater than my fear, and discovered my truest identity, the title that means the most, Daughter of God. Do you ever feel as if you're being chased by fear and anxiety? I'd like to share some lessons I've learned in my faith journey, lessons I've framed through verses from Proverbs. I hope they will help bring you the peace, freedom, and joy they've brought me. Lesson 1. The fear of man lays a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is safe. Proverbs 29:25. I grew up in Dunellen, New Jersey, a suburb 30 miles from New York City. Both of my parents ran track, but they never pressured me. From an early age, I loved to run. Then I began competing, and something else took hold of me, a need not to just run, but to win. On the way to a race when I was 7, I told my dad I was terrified of losing. "If that happens," he said calmly, "we'll get some food and go home." His message didn't sink in. The more I raced, the more I won. And the more I won, the more fear took over. What if I didn't win the next time? Junior year of high school, I ran so well, I made it to the 2016 U.S. Olympic Trials in Eugene, Oregon. Before my first heat, I looked at the runners warming up around me. They were confident women with well-designed race strategies. I was a timid 16-year-old girl. I never felt so undeserving. I was so scared. I called my dad. "Can I please pull out?" I begged. "You're already there, Sid," he said. "Just get the experience." At the starting line, my competitive instinct kicked in. I won that heat and the next. In the final, I finished 3rd. Grabbing the last spot on the Rio Olympic team, I felt relief that the race was over, then panic. I dreamed of running in the Olympics since watching the women of Team USA win gold in the 4x400-meter relay on TV when I was 8, but all I can think about now was the very real possibility of losing. I made the semifinals of the 400-meter hurdles in Rio. So did the other two Americans, Delilah Muhammad and Ashley Spencer. There was talk of an American sweep. The weight of those expectations was suffocating. Partway through my semifinal, my will to win left me. Instead of my usual surge in the last seconds, I let up. My Olympics were over. The fear I'd been giving into was a trap. It stole one of the greatest seasons of my life. It told me, if you can't be perfect, why even try? Blessings can become burdens if you let fear control you. Had I known then what I know now, that I should have looked to the Lord, not other people, for meaning and purpose, I would have run for the pleasure of running, competed for the joy of competition, honored God for the gift He had given me, the gift of speed. Lesson 2. Know that wisdom is such to your soul. If you find it, there will be a future, and your hope will not be cut off. Proverbs 24:14. I moved to Los Angeles in the fall of 2018 to begin my professional career. The 400-meter hurdles are one of the most grueling events in track. No other event requires such a combination of technique, endurance, and speed. My first year as a pro, I missed too many training days. My lack of discipline showed. I had trouble clearing the hurdles. Delilah, the reigning Olympic champion, demolished me and the world record at Nationals. My anxiety ratcheted up. At the 2019 World Championship in Doha, Qatar, I stuttered on the 8th hurdle. I still finished with the 3rd fastest time in the history of my event, but Delilah ran the fastest time ever, breaking her own world record. I found my dad in the tunnel under the stadium and sobbed, ashamed because I knew things could have been different if I'd prepared right. I thought I could find happiness that had eluded me on the track by getting back together with an old boyfriend, only he wasn't interested at all. I felt worthless. My parents had raised my siblings and me in the church, but I didn't really know God. I'd been avoiding him because I had this idea of him as a harsh taskmaster who demanded that I give up what I enjoyed, including running, to serve him. Even so, my soul must have been yearning for him because I found myself thinking, the only way I'm going to heal from this is with God. So I started going to church again. Later, when I studied the Bible, this verse from Proverbs made so much sense. The author likens wisdom to honey. Wisdom lets you take bitter experiences and find the sweetness, the good in them. Setbacks don't derail you because you know that God has a future for you. Lesson 3. Without counsel, plans fail, but with many advisors, they succeed. Proverbs 15:22. For so long, I thought everything was up to me. What pressure to put on myself. No wonder fear had me in its grip. It wasn't until the COVID pandemic that I opened up to two people who ended up changing my life. The first is my coach, Bobby Kersey. I met him in May 2020 when stay-at-home orders loosened and the track at UCLA reopened. One day, I got so fed up with my lack of progress, I started to cry. I bent over on the side of the track, trying to hide my tears. Bobby stepped away from the group he was training and asked me what was wrong. I'm not sure why, but I blurted, "For the first time in my career, I feel like I'm going backward." Bobby pulled out a paper from his backpack and handed it to me. On it was a color wheel labeled with different emotions. Angry, happy, sad, mad were in the middle. The farther from the center, the more specific the words got. "I have a hard time expressing my emotions too," Bobby said. "I want you to have this. Hopefully, it will help you identify what you're feeling." That night, I studied the wheel. What was I feeling? Angry at how helpless I felt to solve my problems? Frustrated that I wasn't improving? Resentful about all of the above? Putting a name to my emotions gave me hope that something could change. One thing I knew, I wanted Bobby to be my coach. He said, "I'm going to need your full trust in my plan. You have to be all in." I didn't hesitate. I'm all in. My college coach was big on technique. My first professional coach built my speed and power. Bobby does it all, especially getting me in the right mindset. As he did that moment with the emotion wheel, he seems to sense the guidance I need right when I need it. The second life changer is the man who is now my husband, Andre LeVron Jr. He showed up as a follower on my Instagram that August. He'd played in the NFL and was working in real estate in Maryland. His post surprised me. Jesus was everywhere. No separation between his life and the rest of his life. Intrigued, I followed him back. 2 weeks later, he sent me a DM. We messaged a bit, then set up a FaceTime date. We talked about our childhoods, our families. He invited me to a Bible study made up of athletes. We talked almost every day after that and read the Bible together. That fall, we finally met in person in LA. He told me about mistakes he'd made in past relationships. He put everything out in the open. With Andre, my mistakes didn't seem like something I needed to hide anymore. Before he went back to Maryland, Andre gave me a study Bible. "This one really helped me," he said. On the inside cover was a dedication. He wrote that he was excited to see me blossom and have glorious growth. I did go on to experience glorious growth in my career, and more important, in my faith. None of that would have happened if I hadn't trusted the advisors God put in my life. Lesson 4. Commit your work to the Lord, and your plans will be established. Proverbs 16:3. In January 2021, Andre came to visit me. One night he suggested we listen to a sermon on Colossians 3. Verses 8 through 10 jumped out at me, especially the part about putting on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. That's when it clicked for me. I'd been keeping faith, family, track, and relationships on their own separate islands. But the Lord wanted every part of me. He wanted my hopes and ambitions, and my insecurities and anxieties, everything. At the end of the sermon, I knelt and asked the Lord to forgive me for trying to do things on my own. Do your will in my life, I prayed. Transform me. An indescribable joy swept over me in that moment. Surrendering to God was not giving up my freedom. It was finding it. All spring, Bobby entered me in 60 or 100-meter hurdle races. He knew the shorter distances would force me to confront my problems with the hurdles. I wouldn't be able to rely on my foot speed. I dreaded those races. I didn't perform well, even finishing dead last in one race. One day, Bobby had had enough. Attack the hurdles, he told me. Just go out there and get the job done. What are you afraid of? I asked myself as I dug my feet into the blocks. What's the worst that could happen? Why not attack every hurdle? From the moment the gun went off, I ran without fear. I didn't win, but it was the best time I'd run in the 100 hurdles. I realized something. The only one holding me back was me. I wasn't going to let that happen anymore. The 2021 U.S. Olympic trials were held in Eugene, Oregon, the same place where I'd raced as a frightened 16-year-old, before we left for the stadium for my final event. Andre and I prayed. He had led the prayer with previous two rounds, but this time I took it. I asked that God be glorified and give me the strength to leave it all on the track, unafraid, unashamed. The 8 finalists were called to the starting blocks. I was in lane 6. Delilah, my greatest rival, was in lane 7. For the first time at the starting line, I felt free to trust in God's plan. There was no room for fear. We got off to a fast start, Delilah in the lead. I was in rhythm. When I reached the 8th hurdle, I had that feeling, that indescribable joy. Delilah was one step ahead. By the time we cleared the last hurdle, I was in the lead. I summoned every ounce of energy I had and sprinted to the finish line. I saw the clock stop at 51:90. I'd just broken the 52-second barrier for the first time in history. I couldn't wait to tell people what God had done. He carried me around the track for His glory, not my own. At the Tokyo Olympics in August, Delilah set a blistering pace. At the 8th hurdle, I was well behind. To speed up, I shortened my stride. I stuttered into the 9th hurdle. This is like Doha. Don't let this moment slip away. I took the final hurdle with my non-dominant leg, cleared it. I dug deeper than I had ever before and crossed the finish line first. Another world record, 51:46. As Proverbs 16:3 says, when you offer everything you do to the Lord, He will bring it to fruition in His way and in His time. Lesson 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. Proverbs 3:5. At the beginning of April 2022, I noticed a strange tightness in my hamstring. The diagnosis was sciatica nerve entrapment. We tried everything, massage, wraps, dry needling, shockwave therapy. Nothing worked. My only option was to rest. Just as track season was ramping up, I had to ramp down. Maybe I wouldn't race again in 2022. God used this time of uncertainty to teach me about trust. Sometimes, when there are a lot of unknowns and there's nothing you can do to fix a problem, you need to be patient and wait on the Lord. I learned to take it a day at a time. After about a month, the tightness went away. The 2022 World Championships were the most pressure I'd ever felt in my career. I was the favorite. I had the most to lose. But I wasn't afraid. I ran aggressively, attacking each hurdle, not holding anything back. My legs almost buckled when I landed after the final hurdle. I won with a new world record of 50:68. Thank you, God, I said. It was all I had the strength to say, and all I needed to say. God had delivered me from fear, replacing it with faith. Faith that if I used the gift He'd given me to the best of my ability, win or lose, I would glorify Him. In racing and in life, God gives you exactly what you need to run the race He has set for you. Harold and me, they're nearly all gone now, the generation we call the greatest. This woman's mission was to honor one of them. Written by Patty Jo Catterson, Montrose, Pennsylvania. I scanned the line of older gentlemen boarding the charter bus, looking for the veteran I'd be accompanying on a 2-day tour of the war memorials in Washington, D.C. That Saturday morning in September 2019 was my first time volunteering for Honor Flight, and I wanted everything to go smoothly. Planning is something I'm big on. I checked the name tags. None were Harold Gary. Harold was 98, a World War II veteran, one of the last of the greatest generation. I admire the men and women who serve our country. My late parents were Air Force veterans. I thought of following in their footsteps, but my dad wouldn't hear of it. I went into accounting, then IT, eventually working for Lockheed Martin, a defense contractor. Maybe the seed had been planted in my teens when I watched my proud father step off the plane from Vietnam in civilian clothes so protesters wouldn't spit on him. But I'd long felt a pull to do something more for veterans. I'd asked for God's guidance about it. I got closer to retirement age. Several weeks earlier, my company had held a fundraiser for Honor Flight. Is there a way to volunteer? I asked. So here I was, hoping to give back in some small way. At last, I spotted Harold. He'd been standing to the side, letting everyone else board the bus ahead of him. I introduced myself. Were you waiting for me? No, no, Harold said. These other veterans deserve the best seats. How could a World War II veteran feel unworthy of respect? Right then and there, I made it my mission to show Harold that he, too, was a hero. On the ride to D.C., I asked about his service, bit by bit. His story came out. I grew up on a dairy farm during the Depression, he said. Seven of us kids. But I was closest to my brother, Dana. We called him Dan. He was 2 years younger. We were inseparable. Harold attended college for a year, but by 1942, the U.S. was in the thick of the war. At 21, he joined the Navy, finishing at the top of his class at Air Gunner School. He served as a flight engineer gunner and aviation mechanic aboard a patrol bomber that guarded U.S. warships sailing to Europe. His crew was based in the United States. I didn't do much, he said. Not like Dan. I'm here for him. Your service matters, too, I wanted to tell him. Dan joined the Army Air Force and went to England with the 390th Bomb Group, Harold said. A captain, Dan led a squadron on bombing raids over Europe. On November 30, 1944, his 25th raid, Mission 222, his crew bombed a synthetic oil plant in Germany. Flying home, he was hit by anti-aircraft fire. His plane burst into flames, rolled, and hit another, Harold told me. Both crashed and exploded. Harold paused. His grief was palpable. This was why he felt he hadn't done enough. Dan's buried in Belgium, he said. I've never had the opportunity to go over there. I don't guess I'll ever get the chance. I figured this bus trip was a way of honoring my brother. I'm so sorry, I said. That's not something you ever get over, I know. But without men like you, Dan might not have made it to Europe. You're a hero, too. He shrugged and shook his head. In D.C., we went to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the Korean War Veterans Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial, and the U.S. Marine Corps War Memorial. At Arlington National Cemetery, we watched the changing of the guard. Harold stood for the entire hour. The next day, we visited the World War II Memorial. Harold's vision was limited, so I read him the quotes on the marbled walls. We talked about Pearl Harbor and D-Day, the servicemen who had fought and died together. Not a day passes, I don't think about Dan, he said. I wish people knew more about what he did. On the bus back to Pennsylvania, I told Harold more about myself. Like him, I was one of seven kids. As a military brat, I lived all over the world. I feel like I'm from everywhere and nowhere, I said. Harold chuckled. My husband Chris was from Montrose, Pennsylvania, and we settled there, raised our family. Harold, too, lived in Montrose. It's a small town. Population, 1,363. It was surprising that we'd never met before. Was there a reason God had brought us together now? It was hard to tell what I'd accomplished in these past 2 days with Harold. He still didn't see himself as anyone special. We said our goodbyes. I couldn't get Harold out of my mind, so I called him the next day. How you doing after all that walking? I said. I'm definitely feeling it. I'm a little tired, he said. Nothing a couple extra naps can't cure. I wish I had your energy, I said. A few days later, I called again. I kept calling every week just to chat, drawn to him a way I couldn't quite explain. I invited Harold over one Saturday to meet Chris. Turns out, they had been eating breakfast every Friday at the same diner for years and already knew each other by sight. In March 2020, the country went into pandemic lockdown. Harold and I spoke every day. He was coping better than I was. He worked on a weekly missive he emailed to close friends and family. At the end of May, he turned 99. I organized a parade in which people drove by his apartment building to wish him happy birthday. For his 100th, Harold wanted to hold a walkathon to benefit Honor Flight. I helped him put it together with assistance from Honor Flight. Like I said, I'm big on planning. He made the local news and raised more than $6,000. The more I got to know Harold, the more I admired him. He worked until he was almost 90, farming, driving trucks. He'd raised 6 children. He still walked 2 miles a day. With his 101st birthday approaching, I knew what I needed to do. "Got plans for your birthday?" I asked. "You going to tell me?" he replied mischievously. "You'll need a passport," I said. "Chris and I want to take you to Belgium to visit Dan's grave." He was quiet for a moment. "I'd like that," he said. We flew to England in June 2022. I'd learned there was a small museum at Parham Airfield in Framlingham where Dan had been stationed. I didn't expect much. Originally, the museum wasn't even going to be open the day we could be there. I told the chairman I was bringing Dana Gary's brother. "Captain Gary," he replied, "we'll open for you. My staff will be at your disposal." They led us to a board with the names of 742 fallen airmen. At the sight of his brother's name, tears trickled down Harold's cheeks. The staff showed us Dana's draft notice and enlistment card, lists of crew members on the bombing missions he'd led, a recreation of the officers' barracks. Finally, a volunteer guide took us to the Room of Sad Stories. Displays honored airmen like Lieutenant Joe Kennedy Jr., John F. Kennedy's brother, killed when his aircraft blew up during a 1944 raid. "Turn around," the docket said. The back wall was devoted to Mission 222 and Dana Gary's brave leadership. Photos, diagrams, the story told in detail. Here was the recognition Harold had wanted for his brother. Harold began to weep anew. Chris was crying as well. I had to leave the room, overcome. The next morning, we took the train to Belgium. At customs, I introduced the agent to Harold and told him why we had come. The young man tore the badge from his uniform, handing it to Harold. "Respect," he exclaimed. "Mad respect." I wasn't sure if Harold understood that "mad" meant great, but there was no missing the agent's awe. At Ardennes American Cemetery, the superintendent from the American Battle Monuments Commission drove us past the rows of thousands of white stone crosses. 5,126 veterans were buried here, 65% of them airmen. At last, we came to the row with the cross Harold had waited 78 years to see. "Dana E. Gary, Captain," was inscribed on it. The superintendent rubbed wet sand from the Normandy beach on the headstone, draped with red, white, and blue flowers I'd ordered. In the distance, "God Bless America" played from the cemetery chapel. There was a chair for Harold in front of the headstone. "Stay as long as you want," the superintendent said. The music faded. I read a poem Harold had written. Then Chris and I stepped back. Harold sat before Dan's marker, his head bowed. I let the peace of the moment settle over me and the love of these two brothers. Through the clouds high in the sky, the sun shone down on us like a blessing from above. I knew God was here, too. "I need you to help me get down on my knees," Harold said. Chris assisted him. Harold touched the ground and said softly, "It won't be long, brother." We returned home changed. Harold no longer talks about being undeserving of recognition. He spoke at a Memorial Day remembrance service where he received a gold star pin for Dan's sacrifice. At a high school Veterans Day program, Harold shared his brother's story and his own. Today, at 103, Harold is an honorary Honor Flight board member. Before each bus trip, he speaks to the veterans. "Tell your story," he urges. "Talk about your service. It's important that people know." I've retired. I have a new purpose that took root long ago, serving those who served, especially my friend Harold Gary. I'm on the board of our local Honor Flight chapter, and I'm helping Harold get his book of Dan's letters republished. I'd signed up for that Honor Flight trip in 2019, looking for a small way to give back. As big as I am on planning, God had a greater plan in mind. He knew Harold and I needed each other to bring our lives full circle. That's all we have time for today. I've been reading from Inspiration for Life Guideposts, June-July 2024. I'm Kathy Moranti. Thanks for listening to Chris.